Hello, I'm Paul.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Ben.
And welcome to the Film Busters podcast. The film show with no filters, no prisoners taken, loads of disagreements, but one hell of a love for cinema.
If you want to hear three friends ridiculing each other for an hour or so regarding their taste in films, then you have come to the right place.
In each episode, one of the team picks a film for us to discuss. It could be anything from a recent cinema release to an all-time classic.
So, strap in and get ready to get mad or get vindicated as we guide you through the murky world of being a film geek.
If you like what you hear, you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram using @FilmBustersPod. You can also find each of our individual accounts. I'm at FilmBustersPaul.
I'm at FilmBustersAdam.
And I'm at FilmBustersBen.
If you want to use your eyes instead of your ears, you can also visit the website at filmbusterspod.co.uk.
And if busting makes you feel good, you can also support us at patreon.com/filmbusters for exclusive content.
Or shoot over and get some groovy merchandise at society6.com/filmbusters.
Alright, can we just get on with this now, please?
Filmbusters. We're back again for another episode.
Yes, here we are. We've gone straight into it. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Welcome. Hello. How are you?
Very well.
How's everyone feeling?
This talk like Americans think British people sound for the rest of the podcast. Hello. This is how a British person sounds.
Not bloody likely.
I'm not even going to entertain this.
That's what they think British people sound
like. That
was
a really good impression there, Adam.
It was.
Yeah. I ain't gonna entertain it, darling. Do you want your chimneys cleared out or what, love?
I watched Neil by Mouth, and it's extremely British, isn't it? In East London.
Cockney beyond belief.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. So Cockney it hurts.
Have you ever seen that Lee Mack sketch where he talks about being so, I'm so Cockney it fucking hurts me to speak it?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen
that?
Where he's walking around the stage, and I tears in my eyes when he did that.
Hello everyone, today we are doing Bug, the William Friedkin film from 2006. This is Ben's choice, very exciting.
Yes it is.
I'm so glad to be back talking to you boys.
Yes.
Yes, we're back at it, and with a proper film this time.
Yeah, we've gone for a proper Hollywood budget this time. Doesn't mean it's going to be better.
No, it doesn't.
We all learnt our lessons last episode.
Yes. Do not judge, don't judge a book by its cover.
It's actually made me happy that you guys really enjoyed Velociraptor. Because I picked it and I was hoping it was going to be that kind of podcast.
Did he say Velociraptor again?
Yeah.
Velocipasta.
Just like he liked the original. He likes the one that's serious. That's actually about a Velociraptor.
About the T-Rex.
It's about a Velociraptor that turned into a priest. It reverses it. Yeah, I know. That was good fun. I still think very fondly of it. It was a good call. It taught me not to be so judgmental. Unless it's a Marvel, and I will judge.
He'll judge that book straight on its cover.
Most certainly.
Anyway, should we segue on to the staple of every episode?
We're going into the quiz already.
Oh, let's fucking do it, mate.
Ooh.
What's the scores? I've forgotten.
Scores on the doors. I'm winning. All right, that's
two for Ben,
know.
Three for Adam, one for Paul.
I don't like the order you did that in. You start at the top and work your way down. That was all over the place.
Yeah, you did it in a funny way.
You say this every time, but I do it just to piss you off.
I've never said that before, I don't think.
You've said it so many times. Right, just so for anyone who actually, this is their first episode, we do a quiz every episode. I ask Adam and Ben two questions. If they get it right, they get a point. If they don't get it right, I get the point. Would you like to hear today's questions, which are all about the William Friedkin film Bug from 2006?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Here's the first question. What item does Peter use to knock the smoke alarm down when it is beeping?
8-ball.
Oh,
well,
shit.
Done, Adam.
He done me. You move real quick on that.
I was waiting for him to say something else because I was like, but then I thought it can't be anything else. That is the question.
You God got it wrong damn. Anyway. It's not an 8-ball. It's a magic 8-ball.
Yes.
Same shit.
It's a magic 8-ball. It's true.
It is true, but I'll give it to him. It's close. It was close enough.
It's one that works.
You know what it said?
It says,
better not tell you now.
Yeah, better not tell you now.
Well done. Is Adam on 4 now then?
He's on 4 points.
Jeez. How many questions we got this week?
We just got another one after this.
Okay.
Do you want to go straight to it?
Yep.
Yeah, this one's for me.
Okay. Agnes lost her son in a supermarket and never saw him again. But what was her son's name?
Lloyd.
Well done, Ben.
Oh, nice. I didn't know for sure.
I wouldn't have got that.
I knew it began with an L. Oh, kept me in the running.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Well done.
Good knowledge.
Am I breathing down his neck then? 4-3-1.
Yeah,
4-3-1.
Oh, Adam, this is sweet. This is our revenge on Paul.
Yeah. Do you know what Paul hasn't done this time? He hasn't done his most famous taglines.
Yeah,
his taglines used to be his thing.
Mm. That's right.
He's forgotten about that.
I might surprise you next week. Yeah. You never know.
He's forgotten about it, and now we've reminded him to do it again.
That's exactly it.
Oh, man.
Look at that. Well done, boys.
That was lovely.
Adam's doing all right at the beginning of this year. He's actually working for his money.
Mm.
Oh, what I do is I only pay half of it. I don't actually want to answer the questions. I just want to answer the questions. That makes sense.
When you know, when an answer's so obvious and you know it, you take about half an hour to spit it out.
Yeah, because I'm always like, it can't be that obvious.
He goes, well, I was waiting for the question to finish and you just jumped in.
Yeah, but it's like, I thought that it was like, oh, is that it?
Well, look, Adam, you are getting smarter and smarter as the years go on.
Your head's getting bigger and bigger.
Do you know what I start doing now? I really start watching films and thinking what the questions could be. Like, I thought of, like, what's the hotel number?
Oh, no, don't
room?
Do that, though.
Like, is he going to ask me what the hotel number room is? I was like, it's number 7.
I didn't even know what the number was.
No, neither did I.
Good knowledge.
I swore that, and I thought, I remember that. They won't be a question.
I swore that
I did, and I thought, I've got to remember that.
This is a very British episode.
I was going to shout, before you finished that question about what was her son's name, I was going to shout out onions, because I thought you were going
for the red onions.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say what food was significant in the scene or something.
I would have said, what was next to the trolley?
A gumball machine.
Onions.
No, it wasn't. It was a gumball machine.
Well, look at Adam, very observant.
Yeah.
I only watched it yesterday.
Whoa.
Beautiful. Should we move on? Should we go to the main event?
We've got to talk about some special people first, haven't we?
Oh, yes, some beautiful people, Adam. Well done for saying that. Yes, we got some beautiful patrons that we need to mention. And they are...
Katie and Oti from For Your Ref Pod.
We've got Julio over at Kacharians.
We've got Nerdrovert, the very beautiful man.
And we got Jamie, the very beautiful man. Julio's a beautiful man as well. We mustn't make out like he's not.
We can't be calling everyone beautiful, because then it just doesn't have the same effect. We need to mix it up every so often. You need to find some more adjectives for these people. Is adjectives?
He's a very handsome, handsome man.
Who is the most handsome patron? We'll save that for the patron episode. So they're all our lovely patrons who support us through thick and thin. And if you want to join in the fun with them, you can go to patreon.com/filmbusters or just Google it. Just Google it. There's many tiers you can sign up to. Each one's named after a Ghostbuster. And for our patrons, when this episode is over on the Patreon platform, we will be discussing films that aren't what they seem. So films that appear to be about one thing, but actually... when you strip away the surface layer, they're actually about something else altogether. And we're going to be talking about some films that we know like that. So if you want to hear that discussion, join into the Patreon party.
Okay, beautiful. I said beautiful again. That is my word of the episode, apparently.
Yes, you've changed lovely to beautiful.
Let's move on swiftly to the main event.
They got to you. God damn it. You're a part of this.
I'm just trying to make sense out of something.
Okay, you tell me, do we have the bugs?
No, I'm just looking for some kind of an explanation.
Do we have bugs or not?
I don't know.
It's not a matter of opinion. An organism just is or it isn't.
Right.
So, are the bugs or aren't they?
Some.
No, not some bugs. Don't give me some bugs. Presence of bugs, absence of bugs. The sign outside says vacancies or no vacancies. It doesn't say possibility of vacancies. Now, do we have bugs or not?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone, today we're talking about Bug, the William Friedkin film from 2006. I was going to cut that bit out, and then you said the William.
Keep it, William, the William.
William Friedkin.
That's great. Yeah, did you have that lined up? That works with that tune.
No, it's from How I Met Your Mother, and he goes, it's not from How I Met.
It's from American Dad.
That's it, American Dad.
But they don't say William Friedkin.
Stelios.
Yeah. Very good. Paul don't like this. He's gone very silent.
I don't.
He's going to edit
that out. I don't get the reference, so I was letting you play it out between
you. Should leave that in for your reference.
Yes, for your reference, we'll get the reference.
I will leave it in. This is a spoiler episode, so we'll be talking spoilers straight away, no hanging around. But first of all, Adam, you will have to do a shit plot summary.
Do you know what? I always forget I've got to do this until you just said
That's what
it.
Makes them so good. You have to do it off the cuff.
You never remember.
So this film is called Bug. It's all set in one room, I believe, isn't it? That's an exciting point right there. It's about a barmaid who meets Michael Shannon. He's just in their house. They met him in like at the bar, and he's just hanging out with them, and he kind of stays, and then they become friends, and then they become more than friends. But he's got a hidden secret the whole time, and he is slowly going crazy, and she is going down that path with him, and it all leads to a climactic ending. Climactic ending, that's the word, yeah.
What did you say? I didn't hear what you said.
I don't think I said it. I don't really know what I said. Yeah. That is a plot for that film, I think.
That was fine. Yeah. It was a very fine, very fine plot summary.
It took all of the intensity out of this.
Yes, I had to think too much about what I was saying next rather than rolling with it.
I'm glad you
asked. It was accurate in as much as... yes. As you always give very factual plot synopses.
I know.
There's no heart or emotion to it. It's always
piss out
just,
of me when
just
I used to just go rolling with it, and so I've stopped doing that now, and I've just go for the facts.
Well, okay, so yeah, that's correct. That is Bug. Top line information, directed by William Friedkin, who we covered a couple of months ago on the podcast. We did Sorcerer, which he directed. One of the people on Twitter suggested that one. Good recommendation. So this was directed by William Friedkin as well. It was based on a Tracy Letts play of the same name. Tracy Letts also worked with Friedkin again after this on Killer Joe. It stars Ashley Judd and Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon also starred on stage in the role first before William Friedkin saw him performing and was like, I've got to make a movie about this. And that's all I want to say about it for now. We go into the more detail in the actual episode itself. Paul, I want to throw to you first. What's wrong?
You
in the
it's
my Jeff Goldblum, isn't it?
So throw to me first.
Yes, I want to go straight to you, sir, and I want to hear what you thought, because you thought you'd actually seen this movie before.
Yes, I thought I did, but I know I've seen the cover a hell of a lot. I used to, because I think my mum must have had this film or something, and I thought I'd watched it, but obviously I hadn't, because I didn't know anything going into it when I started watching it. I knew what it was about, but maybe I just watched a trailer a long time ago or something, I don't know.
Yes,
I had no idea what the film was about.
It's about a bug.
Yeah,
Or is it?
Well, what kind of bug?
Or is it? Many forms.
Well, let's find out. Tell your review. I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no doubt the acting is top notch from an always crazy Michael Shannon and Ashley Judd, who I feel like I know her more than I do, but I don't know why.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, same feeling.
Yeah. I don't even know. Like, I know
she looks extremely recognisable.
Yeah, I've seen a film of her with Samuel Jackson in. I can't remember what it was called, but apart from that, I've no idea why I know her so well. But anyway, the set is beautifully crafted, and I love how it's lit. It's lit very well. It's almost like they're trapped inside that insect in Sterminator the whole time, which I very much like that tinge of blue everywhere. But I think partly because I've been oversaturated with crazy Shannon, I never really got tied up in the plot, or are they crazy or not? Because I never really thought, are they not crazy? And there's actually something deeper going on. I just thought they're just crazy, so I never really cared too much for what was transpiring. Like the majority of the story focuses on the viewer being like put into the headspace of insanity. And being like expected to almost believe in the delusion and see it as the truth. But I just never did. And I was just watching the delusion, but was never really like fully involved in it. But it doesn't stop it from being like some incredibly interesting view on paranoia. And it's got some solid acting in it. So I give it a very fair 7.
Okay.
I could feel you going that way.
I thought it was a 7. That's the moment you said you didn't go with the craziness, I was like, 7 them.
The minute you said The acting is really... You opened it up by going, the acting is really good. So,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Here we go.
He didn't really take to it. Okay. All right. Fair enough. We get into that. Adam, let's hear it.
Okay. So this is me. I'm potentially going to give this film 2 scores. I'm going to give it 1 score now, but on discussion, this score could change. And I think it's only going to change for the better, not for the worst. I feel like there's a lot of points to talk about in this film, and talking about with you guys, it could actually enhance this film for me. Again, like Paul says, the acting in this film is really, really good. It's shot really well. It's got a really interesting plot. You never really quite know what's going to go on and what's going to happen next. It kind of keeps you on your toes. There are some very heartfelt moments in it. There are some very emotional moments. There's also some quite funny moments. Well, I don't think they're meant to be intentionally funny, but I found them quite funny. especially when Michael Shannon was explaining stuff, it was quite funny the way he was doing it sometimes. I don't want to say much more now. I'm quite excited to talk to you about it, but I'm giving this film an 8 out of 10, and it could potentially be a 9 maybe by the end of this, depending how this discussion goes.
I was not expecting you to say that. I was expecting you to say you give it like a 7 and it might get an 8.
No, it definitely deserves more than a 7. This is a film that I feel like as well you'll continue to think about maybe beyond the end of this film, for me anyway at least.
Interesting.
That is interesting. So before I suggested this film in the last podcast, I removed my review, my star rating from Letterboxd, because I didn't want you guys to see what I'd given it. But the funny thing is, I actually forgot what I
gave it
before, so it kind of was like reviewing it all over again. So this is the third time that I've watched this film.
When was the first times?
I don't know. The first time was like 10 years ago. The second time was a couple of years ago with Jenny. And then this was the third time. And this time is probably going to be my last ever time watching it, because I don't ever feel like I need to see this film again now. I enjoyed it a lot more on the first and second viewing, I think. This one, it went a lot slower, I feel, because I just knew everything that was coming. And I don't think it has that rewatchability for me. That said, it's an 8 out of 10 film for me, just because I had to think about how I felt when I watched it that first and second time. This time around, the experience felt more like a 7, because I didn't feel like it held up to the repeat viewings, but I can't forget how I felt when I first watched it, and that's how it should be. And what I like about the film, I can't really easily sum it up here. It's hopefully what we'll discuss over the next hour or so. But what I do like is seeing two very vulnerable people leaning very heavily on each other in this intense situation, and I like how it explores their mindsets rubbing off on one another, and how the more they talk, the more volatile the situation they create out of nothing, potentially. Like what you said, Paul, you didn't really for a second think that there was this bug that had been implanted by the government. No, me either, but I kind of felt like I was enjoying watching the psychological breakdown of these two more than is this happening or isn't it happen. But what I enjoy most of all is how everything that we see and hear in the film is a metaphor for something else that's going on to the surface, which in a nutshell is fucking broken people who have been hurt or damaged in one way or another will look for answers in either the wrong place or the wrong people. I want to talk about that as we go along. So
yeah,
you have the floor.
Okay. Very good.
I do agree with you though. I don't think I'll be watching this film again. I don't feel you need to watch this film again. Maybe I feel like one viewing is enough, and like you said, I don't think it would have the same effect again. Now you know what's going to happen. Yeah, it doesn't. I'll give you that point. But and it's also quite a hard watching places. Like, it's not pleasant. Like, you're not like, you don't come at that film feeling all rejoiced and escaping, is in. It's quite a dark film in places as well. So
it's very dark. It's very the whole fucking thing is in the headspace of this guy's fucking psychosis, right? It's Michael Shannon's psychosis, and then it becomes their shared fucking psychosis by the end of it. So you're living in this paranoid, broken fucking world.
I don't think you're meant to believe there ever is a bug. You're never led to believe it. There's never hints at it. There's never anything. You are just trying to take his word for it, which is she's taking his word for it. And she slowly convinced herself, but I don't think you're ever meant to think, oh shit, there actually is bugs in this room. He is not the one going crazy. He's the one being attacked.
That I feel like they're trying to lead you down that path when the doctor comes in. And he starts saying, like, yeah, they are watching you. I can tell them to back off. And
yeah, but he's just trying to reason with her. He's just the reasonable person.
He is. That was what he was trying to do. He was just trying to basically coax them out and get them to come to the hospital by making them trust him, basically. But yeah. I feel like they were trying to plant some seeds that maybe there was something else happening. Like there was actually some kind of implanted thing inside them. Because he was trying to say, oh, I can come take the egg sacs out for you and stuff.
Yeah, but that's him just playing along with it to try and get them on his side. Yeah, of course. That's all it was. I don't think you as a viewer are ever meant to believe him as well.
Some people will.
Well, at what point, this is my third watch, so from the off I'm like, well, I know that this stuff isn't happening. But for you guys, at what point in the film are you like, okay, this isn't happening?
From the beginning, I never felt like there was anything other than...
So when he woke up, because essentially it begins after they have sex, yeah. And he's like, shit, I've been bitten. So from that, right away, you were going, no, he hasn't.
Because he was trying to show this bug and she immediately couldn't see it. But then she kind of convinced herself she could.
Yeah.
Because from the beginning, she was like, I can't see anything. What are you showing me? And he was like, it's an aphid. Can't you see it's in my fingers?
Yeah, that bit was funny when he was talking about aphids. And like, no, it's not an aphid. An aphid is an aphid. A bed is a bed bug. A tick is a tick or something like that. Whatever he was saying, he was going off about bugs. It was quite funny.
This is why I was like, this film is just made for Ben. Because I know it's on the stage play, isn't it? So it's basically a play. Basically just put to film, and I was thinking, this is up Ben's street, so I knew you picked this film because you liked it. I knew that much.
Don't really think you're ever meant to convince there were bugs. Even at the beginning you might first of all be like, oh, we might have got bitten, but then when you like, there is no evidence at all for you as a viewer. The only time they actually probably show a bug is when he pulls his tooth out and then there's that merging screen. But again, then there's millions of them and it's ridiculous. And you're like, well, that obviously didn't happen. That's now in their minds.
Well, see, this is what I feel would have made the film interesting. If you had that kind of idea, maybe there is something happening. I never even got the hint of like something otherworldly or something else was happening other than exactly what was happening on the screen. It was just like, he's just a paranoid schizophrenic. That's it. And everything he was talking about, I was like, well, he's nothing he's saying is actually true. So I couldn't fully get involved in what he was talking about.
Yeah, I don't think you ever are, though. You're meant to believe that he is that person. It's like watching the Joker film. You're never meant to think he is a normal person. You're always meant to think, well, not normal person. That's a very kind of harsh way of putting it. But let's say, well, the insane as he's trying to make out he is.
I'm trying to say that I feel like that could have been an interesting element if there was that, maybe he is telling the truth, maybe there is some kind of truth behind what he's saying. I think that would have added an extra element that I could have latched onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can get that. It would have been a different kind of film.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Because like the reason that I like it is because of what I said is like I just enjoy seeing these two people lean into the fucking psychosis of the situation. Yeah. I like seeing it play out. I believe from that point where as you say, where she's saying I can't see it, what is fascinating about the film is how she then starts bit by bit to see it, fall into the spell of what's going on. And I like, that's what's fascinating to me. If like anytime they hint at there potentially being a government conspiracy, like with the choppers and all of that, you know it's stylistic shit. Mm-hmm. Like, why would a fucking helicopter be coming so low and chopping right over the motel like that and then just fucking disappear? So,
but then they also don't pay back to it, do they? It destroyed everything in the room and then the next scene everything's fine and they don't even mention it.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. So I just like the spiral. What totally strikes me is like from the off she's fucked up, she's on a diet of like coke and vodka and shit, cigarettes and all of that stuff. She's lost her son. Her husband or her partner is an absolute fucking asshole. She's living out of this motel. She has a desperate fucking life. She's in a desperate situation. She's longing for human connection. And the only real connection she has is with her friend who works in that bar. Then she brings this really intense guy over who at first seems okay and spends some time with her. But the more time they spend with each other, he gets under her skin. But then she so willingly goes with it. It's like, that's what's fucking fascinating to me. It's like, well, here's broken people, people who are like down and weak in a certain position because of what life, the cards that life has dealt them. What are you willing to go along with? How far are you willing to go along with a fantasy in order to feel connected? Yeah.
She was impressionable.
Connected to someone. So I was going to wait a while to bring this up, but I'll just ask you both now. In your lives, have either of you ever had a connection with another individual that was so intense, not to the point of this, but that was so intense that you knew it was bad for you, but you went along with it because you had to, or you part of you felt it?
Yeah, I had a friend like that when I was younger, and he was fucking nutcase. He threatened like the teacher with a pair of scissors once and jumped out the window and ran away. I don't know if he ever went to school again, but he we used to break into this warehouse when we were younger. This is getting fucking proper real talk now.
This is what I wanted to hear. Yeah, this is what I wanted to hear.
We used to break into this like car warehouse when we were younger. It's like an abandoned warehouse, and we used to skate in there and smoke up and stuff. And we brought this guy along initially, and one day we came back and we knew we were the only three people who were in there, and he fucking smashed the place up, right? And we're like, fuck this. And we moved into another office that was like across the way. And then one day we were in this other office and this white van turned up and he jumped out and he was looking through the other warehouse, and we're like fucking peeking through the windows. And I was like, fucking don't even tell him we're here. This is fucking weird. Because he was a nutcase. He was on proper mental drugs at that time. But and from that point he never came back into our life again. But he was a live wire, mate.
Well, you see. And they're out there, but you hung around, but you got away from him when you could.
Yeah, we got away from him, but
so you didn't really go into his spell. It wasn't like you knew he was doing that bad shit and you kept going into it.
Well, we were friends with him for a long time, but then it got to a point
but you always
where
knew he
we
was
just had to separate.
The unstable person. She doesn't think he's unstable, that's it. It's the moment where her friend goes to help her, and then she slaps her friend. That's the moment you're like, well, this is it now, you're stuck with him. That was your lifeline.
She's defending the person that she feels like most connected to the world with at that point, and she's got a deeper connection in that short time with Michael Shannon than she has with her her friend. I didn't know. How long did you think this film was meant to have taken place over on a timeline?
That seemed to jump quite far into the future.
I'd say it's probably about a month.
Mm, yeah. She spiraled very. If it was,
there's a few
she spiraled
weeks
very
at least.
Quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a few weeks at least. Like, it isn't totally clear in the film. It almost feels like it could have been over a night or two, but I think it's got to be at least a few weeks.
The only thing is, her boyfriend, her ex-husband, he said at the beginning, I'll come back in like a week. You've got to get your stuff together.
That's it. And then and when he comes back, he says, don't you remember me from a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually. Adam, what? Go back to the question, Adam. What have you ever had that connection with someone?
I've never, not to that, degree. I've always had friends that I've probably... You always have a friend that you know you shouldn't... Well, they're always doing shit. You're like, this isn't right. But you kind of go along with it for a bit here and there, but never for a prolonged period of time. I've never connected with them that much. I just like, this ain't good. I'm getting away from this situation as quick as possible. You might hang out with them for like a weekend or a couple of days or what here and there. Or they're a friend of a friend, but never that person that close to me. Like, yeah, you do stupid shit with people, but not like that, obviously. Maybe like Paul's level, but not on that degree for that long period of time. Never someone I would look back and call probably a friend across time.
Yes.
I said I knew that person, but I wouldn't say, oh, they're my friend back in day.
I think everyone has had someone
in one way, shape, or form
that has had that person in their life. And that's why it's interesting, because I've already spoken to you two before about my friend who I ain't going to name that I live with, and we had that kind of relationship. Yeah. And... there, so basically, Tracy Letts, the writer, he said that when he was researching this, he came across this psychological term. It's a French psychological term called, I think it's called folie à deux, which means the madness of two. And it's a well-established psychological term, which is where one person catches another person's psychosis, normally through love and closeness, one person just succumbing to the other person. It's the other person being wrapped up in the other person's psychosis willingly. And I think depending on where you are in your life, you would do that. Because when I watch this film, I never look at Ashley Judd and say, oh, come on, you're a fucking fool. Get out of there. Because it's too late. It's not even that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, what is she going to escape to? You can totally understand why she is drawn in by him. Not because he's like charismatic and suave or anything, but because what he's saying, it suddenly gives her something to latch onto and believe in. Her life up to that point is fucking jaded. She's had nothing.
Yeah.
And now suddenly there's something exciting, as dangerous as it is, for her to believe in and buy into. And it is kind of like a love. It is a fucking love, even though it's only been a couple of weeks and you think it can't be. You know, think about a whirlwind romance that you suddenly force as well. It's like that.
Especially when you're so vulnerable as well.
When you're vulnerable, look, my friend, when I moved in with my friend from that time, all the ingredients were weird. He was a recovering heroin addict. He was deeply, deeply fucked up from the drugs. Mm. He had his own huge psychosis, and I had come out of an 8-year long relationship. Imagine that. Yeah. You've had an anchor. Your life has been anchored for 8 years, believing that this is how your life is going to be. Suddenly that goes at almost the exact same time. Someone from your past turns up who is dealing with his own psychosis, and you move in with that motherfucker, and then you spend a year living together. Whoa, boy.
Mm.
I look back at it now as a fantastic experience, but a bullet dodged because it was dangerous. And I knew, looking back on it, I knew it was fucking dangerous at the time.
Yeah.
But it was exciting.
Yeah, because you're looking at that point, you're looking for a change in your life. You come out of the relationship, you also, that's a point to say, so you've now got room to change and as a person, and you're looking for new experiences and just a different bit of your life. You're like, who actually am I now? Because you've become yourself with that person, and now you leave it and you're like, now that I'm not with that person, who am I now as a person as well? Like, you change over 8 years, but you never really change until you may be away from that person. It depends on the relationship with them, but so the two of them, you see this opportunity and you're like, great, this is a friend, I can live with them, let's find out what's going on with myself now and everything. And if that person is that type of person that you're with, or like she is with, then it can be quite dangerous.
No. I just think, I mean, it works. It sounds pretentious, but this film kind of works just like as a study, as a psychological study on mental illness.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it works as, rather than this bit's exciting, that bit's exciting. It works on that dramatic level, like a play would. You know, like imagine reading a fucking play. Just reading the dialogue of this it would be very, very interesting. But I like how by the end, after he's stabbed the doctor, and she's like, what the fuck, he was going to tell me where my son was, how suddenly he grabs her and he's like, no, listen, think about it, what's really going on here? And it goes from him planting the seeds in her brain to her completely owning the situation and fucking saying, this is what happened, oh my god, someone came and took my child, they were in cahoots with my husband.
She's creating the narrative herself.
And she creates it from her own fucking sense of loss, her own vulnerability, because she's saying, I'm the, I can't remember what she said, the mother bug.
The mother bug, yeah.
Mother bug. The bugs, they will never leave. They will never leave me. It's like, that's just coming from this fucking fact that your child has gone. Mm-hmm. Your child is lost. You don't know where your child is. Now you're bought into, these bugs are mine. They're here. And this man is here. We're going to be together.
Yeah.
That
moment where he kills him as well, the doctor at the end, she doesn't even really bat an eyelid after a while. The initial shock happens, but they're never like, oh my god, there's a dead body in the room over there. She's completely gone. Like, he's done the right thing, that person's completely gone out of the world. That's what I found quite they were so deep into that crazy side of it that there is a dead body in the room right next to them, and they never really acknowledge it until the person knocks the pizza on the door.
And even at that point where she's saying, "I'm the mother bug," you even see Michael Shannon like almost like recline and be like, "What the fuck? Like, what is she coming out of right now?" Like, he actually, like, he's like leaning backwards, like, "Holy shit, is this really what happened? Oh my god!" He's like, she's like telling him now what's going down.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, "Oh fuck, I can't believe." But isn't it crazy? See, you know what's fascinating? Have you boys, like, do you, where'd you stand on conspiracy theories of things? Like, 9/11 wasn't really, you know,
I like to explore them. Yeah.
I like to explore them, but to believe in them is another thing, maybe.
I like to believe some of them, but it's, yeah, you never know. How will you ever know?
Dangerous path.
I like to read conspiracy theories and enjoy them, but I'll never, like, consume myself with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I did 10 years ago. I would willingly believe any fucking thing that was a conspiracy theory because it was like exciting. And it was like, okay, all right, yeah, of course this is what happened. But now I think I have a much healthier relationship with them, where I do think critically, I do still think every fucking thing needs to be questioned.
Of course.
Right down to, from terrorist attacks to like things like fucking COVID, all these sorts of things you need to question in a healthy way, but then take your findings and decide for yourself based on what you've heard, okay, what do you really believe? Because there's one thing saying COVID was like, is a whole fucking farce. Nothing's actually happening. No one's really dying. You know, like people say the Holocaust never happened. Holocaust is a big scam. You know, that sort of shit is like, there is so much evidence that flies in the face of that. But the flip side to that coin, and I'm not going to use COVID or the Holocaust, but like 9/11, we only know what we know about 9/11 because of what the media and the governments tell us. So, of course, like you, like Michael Shannon was saying in his film, you know, when he's talking about the Bilderberg group, where the bankers and the government people all got
Illuminati,
together.
Illuminati, basically.
Yeah, but that, what he is saying, actually happened. That happened, and that continues to happen. Every year, they do go and meet, and they burn an owl effigy. This isn't hearsay, this actually happens, right? So when you've got an elite group of people from all over the globe who are doing this stuff, don't you think that they are getting together and orchestrating shit that we aren't aware of? Of course they are.
100%, yeah.
Of course they are. 100%. But then who are we to say what is and what isn't? What is a conspiracy, what isn't a conspiracy theory? What is genuine, what isn't? Maybe COVID is a farce, but I don't fucking think so, and I will act accordingly.
It's about if you believe it that much that you're impacting other people's health or lives.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Where it gets stupid.
You're right.
It's like, believe what you want, but don't let it affect other people and affect people negatively. Like, think what you want, but just don't
like
be
religion
an idiot.
In a way.
Yeah, don't put it on other people, because you've got to let everyone have their own opinion.
Yeah.
It also just helps where you get your news information from as well. So you need to have multiple sources.
It helps where you get your info from. Diversify it, absolutely. Because we've already seen that Fox News and other news sources were in fucking Trump's pocket for a long time. He controlled the narrative, and then they started turning against him, and now someone else controls the narrative.
This is a whole different type of conversation. Well away. Well, it's not well away from the film, but yeah,
this is where it spawns from.
It's part of it. Because, you know, that's, again, Tracy Letts. You know who Tracy Letts is? That he's like, he's this actor who you'll see and think, you never watched Homeland, Adam, but you remember the president, I think he was the president in Homeland, Paul, for one season?
I can't remember.
Hey, Tracy Letts, what's he in? You seen the season two?
No.
I haven't, no. Let me just type
in. Oh, man. When you see him, basically, he's an actor. He's been in a lot of different things,
oh,
but I had
yes,
no idea
yes,
that he was
him.
A writer.
I know him,
yeah?
Yes, yeah.
So he wrote this, and he wrote Killer Joe. And when he was in London with his play, Killer Joe, and while he was over here, on the radio, he was in a caf, and he heard on the radio that Timothy McVeigh had set off that bomb in Oklahoma, right? And on the back of that, he began investigating conspiracy theories and went down the fucking rabbit hole and just found like on the internet, how there was this entire world you could fall into and get caught in and find and never find your way out of it. And by coming out of that, that's why he wrote Bug, because it's like, okay, conspiracy theories can be all fucking consuming for people as well. You know, rational people like us, if we spent enough time sat at a computer constantly reading conspiracy theory outlets, we would go from being, no fucking way. If I told you now, okay, Donald Trump is actually Jeremy Corbyn in disguise. Ha 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 ha. But now if there's 20 websites that you start reading through and clicking into videos and hearing so-called professionals saying this and that and this and that, the more you hear it and the more you're surrounded by it, the more you start going, oh, well, maybe, actually, that. How do you explain that?
Have you seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix?
No.
Basically, this is what that whole program is about. It just explains about how the algorithms behind social media works at the moment. So say, basically, if you went on YouTube and you Google a conspiracy theory, your next one would be a conspiracy theory video. And it slowly goes from you basically saying is Jeremy Corbyn Donald Trump to like proper shit about how the world is controlled by a certain number of people and like going down these rabbit holes of conspiracy theories, and to the point where that is all you view on your YouTube page. Your YouTube video is so suggestive, isn't it? If you view one video on motorbikes, yeah, the next video is going to be on motorbikes as well, and you'll start getting all these videos. But where it becomes dangerous is with this whole fake news thing and anti-fake news and this whole Trump propaganda that they were saying about, and how they kind of want you to be diverse as well, because that keeps you coming back and you keeps your friends talking about it and all of this, and how the algorithms behind social media work, and how if you then try and put yourself away from it for a week, you'll get notifications saying, have you watched this video? And it will slowly know how to get you back in. It will learn what time of day you used to watch your most viewed videos. It know that at 7 p.m. you'd sit down on YouTube for an hour. If you're not doing that, it will go, I'll send you an email about 6:15 saying, do you want to watch this video on your phone, and all that type of stuff. It's incredibly interesting to watch about, well, if you want to talk about this, I mean. And it's all done.
They talk about your phone advertising.
Yeah. And it's all, the people in this documentary are all people who work, they, like, I think one guy set up Google, one guy set up Twitter. They're all people who basically were in Silicon Valley when social media became that burst. And these people have been behind it all. And they're the ones telling you all of this, they're like breaking the secrets about it.
It's very interesting. I always think of the documentary Zeitgeist, which...
Oh, which you love that.
Yeah, split into three parts. I never watched the last part. It's about the stock market, but...
it's a hard watch. It's hard to get into.
It is hard to get into. It's very factual, and like by the book, you're basically just listening to some list stuff. But the first part's about religion and how every religion's the same. It's all based on the movements of the sun and the stars, and... it's very informative, and it makes total sense. And the second one is about 9/11, and that just blows it out of the water and just shows how it was a conspiracy theory. I mean, it was a conspiracy, not a conspiracy theory.
This is the thing, and there's always got to be... Oh, it's getting a bit on a wish, but there's always people involved in it somehow.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I know... Well, in my head now, I know I'm saying I know, because I don't actually know, but I... No, 9/11 was a conspiracy.
Yes,
obviously, I never know. But it's more like, but what can I do about it? Because it's done now. It's gone, and it happened so long ago. Who's gonna actually reveal the proper information?
But the beauty of knowing, or not necessarily knowing that, but thinking actually the narrative around 9/11 isn't true. I don't believe it. Mm. The good thing about saying that is it then gives you that healthy relationship to all news media that comes in, so that when you hear someone has done something, you go, have they though?
Yeah.
History is written by the victors. It would be a totally different story if other things happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Think of the narrative in other countries when these deeply terrible things happen. Look, okay, my favorite fucking topic, Israel versus Palestine. What do the news outlets in Israel compared to the news outlets in Palestine have to say about the conflict? Two completely different things. What are you going to believe if you're in Israel? What are you going to believe when you're in Palestine? Yeah. It's not just what you're living through.
You believe
it's what
reporting.
You hear propaganda. And what you're conditioned. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't
like
know.
World War II, for example, you look at it and... what you get told about it is one thing, but when you actually go into detail about everything that happened in World War II and watch documentaries about it, it goes, no side was, well, I mean, obviously there was differences of levels, I'm not saying it for a second here, but what the British then did when they got into Germany, when they were bombing Germany towards the end of the war, was just as horrific as when Germany tried bombing the during the Blitz. And the Russians, when they were coming back through Germany and stuff like that, I'm not saying obviously there is complete different levels here, because one of them just tried wiping out a whole race of people, and one of them was just But they also say,
but everyone has their perspective on it. Everyone has their perspective on it.
We've gone quite away from talking about this film. People have talked about the film. All right,
we'll bring it back to it. So the way that Michael Shannon is carrying on in this, when he is saying so definitively, this is what's happening, they've put this in my blood, this is how they're tracking me in my tooth, is not far removed from what the fucking right wing nutcases is currently saying about COVID.
Yeah. They put SIM cards
and what
in
they
mask.
Think the vaccination's about, and the whole anti-vaxxer movement, and the masks, and the you're taking away our liberty.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all of this is to stop us doing this, doing that. It's like, fuck. But I can see, I could imagine, I hate to think it, but I could imagine potentially 10 years ago when I was in my fellowship with that guy, and also when I was really entertaining conspiracy theories, maybe, I wouldn't like to think so, but maybe I might have gone, this is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see why people go down that route, but to keep talking about conspiracy theories. One of the most interesting things I heard about conspiracy theorists, and I think the thing that potentially stopped me, I was never a conspiracy theorist, I was a free thinker, but the thing that stopped me from being a free thinker all the time was I heard someone say people who believe in conspiracies or conspiracy theorists are people looking for an easy answer, because it's much easier to say, oh yeah, this is what really happened, than to accept that real life can actually be as fucked up as it is. It's too much to believe that people could fucking take a plane and fly it into the Twin Towers and kill all those people just because they hated America. Far easier to say, no, it's a government conspiracy. It's a government conspiracy, and the Jews were actually involved in it. Far easier to say that, because then you can go, you put the blame on specifics.
It's easy to say this is a 2D thing that happened, that these terrorists attacked, than not actually because it's a government job, just because they wanted to go and get some oil from another country.
And they wanted to win another election.
Yeah,
jet fuel don't make steel beams, does it?
But that works both ways, because people would rather believe a 2D answer, like saying,
you never expect the government.
Everyone's going against, like, Donald Trump. He's the king. It's like, but why? It's like he's just so smart, and they don't have the answers. They've just been told.
The J stands.
Yeah, they don't have the nuance. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like this is what it is, and just that's what you got to believe. There's no actual reading up on it.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And you just look at it on that one level. When Trump says, "Put light inside the body,"
I'm surprised there was not more deaths during that time period.
No, I know, man. He has so much blood on his hands anyway, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you boys a couple of questions. And since both of you seem to, the thing that's interesting, which I wasn't necessarily expecting on this, was that both of you would be so from the off. Okay, it's definitely just about. Their psychosis. I thought maybe there would be a little bit more wasn't it for a fair while. But I have a couple of things that happen in the film that I want you to explain to me if there wasn't a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing,
it's something to do with the boyfriend being the doctor.
Okay, that's one of them. Yeah, so go ahead. So the boyfriend bringing the doctor, how did the boyfriend find that fucking doctor?
Because that was the case. He was all asking people in the local
bar. Asked their friend as well, didn't he?
Yeah, so he was hanging around the bars asking everyone, have you seen these people? And he'd seen them.
Yeah.
Interesting. How did you get that?
Her friend said it as well. She said it to him. He said that Dr. Smarty, is it? Something like that? He was asking about you, and then he was like, don't talk about him.
Okay.
That's what I thought. Then the boyfriend's obviously met him, and he's gone, yeah, I'm going to dob this guy in. I want him, my wife back and all that shit.
Okay.
If he's going into a bar asking the barmaid, and he's clearly going to ask other people who are in the bar as well.
All right. Okay. That's fine. Okay. Who was calling her?
That was the husband, wasn't it? At the beginning of the film.
Yeah, I'd say it's the husband.
You could view it that way, but did he really seem like it was? When she questioned him on it, he genuinely, within the film, he was like, well, I've been doing that. But it felt genuine rather than an excuse.
Unless it was Michael and Shannon, he spotted her from before.
Nah, the calls happened when he was with her as well.
I would say that he's a very
manipulative
annoying
person.
Husband, a manipulative person, that he'd just do it for fun because he seems to get a lot.
He was gaslighting her quite a lot throughout the film, so it could have been that. It could have been his trying to win her back, because he was trying to pin the blame on losing the baby at her, the kid at her as well. So she obviously wants to. He was just gaslighting her the whole film. So if she then trying to pin on her that she's crazy and making up these phone calls as well, it's going to only add to her self-doubt, which has actually probably put her in that position in the first place to then believe Michael Shannon's character because of her husband putting her in that situation.
Mm. Yeah, true. All right. I mean, there weren't very many. The only other thing that is an odd thing, and I don't know what the explanation is for it, early on in the film, before she even meets Michael Shannon, when she leaves the motel room, there's a flyer on her windscreen.
It's a bug, didn't it?
Huh?
It's a bug on it, doesn't it?
Did it?
Yeah, it was something. The thing it was advertising for was called Bug. Because I remember seeing it, and I thought, okay, this is where this film's going to go. Because I had no idea about the plot of this film. I didn't know what the bug was going to be. I didn't know where this film was going at all at the moment in time.
I wasn't aware that it said bug on it.
I mean, considering she just hangs around in her room all day.
But
it could easily, the other cars could have moved and the fly wasn't on them anymore.
No, but the cars were quite obviously not moved because they had
that's the
branches
thing.
And stuff.
They had branches and shit
and
all over them. And it's like, why is there a flyer on mine but not theirs?
Well, maybe they were like, these cars are clearly not moving. This has not put a flyer on. It's a waste.
True. Yes.
Maybe.
There you go. Two ways of looking at everything, right? Yeah. I guess that's it from the off. It's like, this is an odd thing. She clocks an odd thing has happened there, but she doesn't question it too much. But you could go deep down the rabbit hole just on that scene alone.
Yeah. This is what I would think would be more interesting. It almost wants you to go in with the paranoia and think, oh, could this mean something in the film? But I think everything's too easily explained.
I get that, but I don't think that's a failing of the film, because I agree with Adam. I don't think they ever really wanted you to believe fully that there was this bug in the blood. I think they wanted to raise the possibility, but then show you quite clearly things are fucked up.
Mm. I guess if they're not trying to do that, then...
What I must say in this film, though, this film is only good because, well, not only good because of the two main characters, but if those performances weren't as good as they gave out, then this film wouldn't have gripped you. There's a lot of things in the film that would fall flat and wouldn't work.
But this is, but
they
that's...
keep you so captivated, and they're so believable as well. Like that end scene between the two of them, that must have been filmed almost in one shot as well. Like
it was.
That's intense acting, man.
Yeah, I saw that as in the trivia. They had to do one
shot.
Oh, was
it in the trivia?
Yeah, they had to do one shot.
You look at it, you're like, you can't possibly cut this scene.
Yeah.
And as intense that scene is, that must have taken a lot to do.
They can only burn down the place once.
And you know
that
fire...
Well, no, I'm just talking about when they're having the conversation into each other's eyes, about when she's spouting off the whole thing about how her baby was stolen by her husband and all the conspiracy theories that came out, and she was the one going off on it, that whole bit.
Yeah, I read William Friedkin, he only wanted to do, like, at the most, two takes for each shot. And sometimes the actor was like, no, please let us do another take. Because he just wanted it to all be, like, kind of, I guess, like, scatterbrain, like, just, it is what it is. Like, to do your raw performance.
This is those type of performances, it's where, like, if the studio and then whatever put more effort into it, and you'd nominate these guys for the Oscars, they should probably get it.
But we never get it because it's too horrific for them, even though it's not a horror film.
Mm. Yeah, but obviously, doesn't like films have to be? They have to do an Oscars run, don't they? Like the network has to put them forward. The Oscars.
Well, you know who is to blame? The reason that this film kind of went under the fucking radar was because Lionsgate released it, and they released it sort of like while the Saw films were on their run, in the middle of all the Saw films, and they marketed the fucking thing to kids who were going out and watching Saw. So like they had taglines like they live in your blood and feast on your brain and shit like that.
Because I watched, when I went to rent this film on YouTube, the poster looks so weird and so different. It's basically his under his skin,
which it's, and it says bug,
the word bug written in it.
Yeah, it's very sore like.
But that's that's the problem.
A completely different film because of that. I thought like he gets bitten by a bug and turns into a bug as well.
Do you think I would recommend you some shit like that, son?
You watched The Fly? I don't know. I thought you were going to go along this line of people turning into
shit. The Fly is better than Bug.
I agree.
And but the, you know, that's the thing. Lionsgate fucked it. That's why it went under the radar, because the people who saw it were kids who were like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the people who would have enjoyed it stayed away because it was marketed like a fucking Saw film.
It's like nothing wrong with the Italian Job. The original Italian Job was marketed completely different in America. It's a really weird poster, and it's like not a heist film. It's like he's got a machine gun on the cover of it, and it looks like it's a proper, but it's not. It's a completely different film when you watch.
That's how you sell stuff to Americans. Whack a machine gun in there, right?
Yeah, like America.
Sorry, Julio.
Sorry.
Well, I know he's the only guaranteed American listener that I know.
Let me. I got one more thing. I really like the sweeping shots and the ceiling fan that was almost like a bit like Apocalypse Now, like the sound of like the choppers in Vietnam.
Yeah, it's when he was lying on the floor and he goes, "Can I lie on the floor?"
It's a constant sound of the helicopters overhead, but it's actually that ceiling fan.
So there should be a wider conversation about the fact that this guy. Like, is he Michael Shannon? Do you believe him to be a villain in this film?
No.
I would say the villain's her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michael Shannon is a victim.
He's the one who's pushed to that state, and he's the one who's made her vulnerable. Michael Shannon wasn't even, I wouldn't even say he was an opportunist. He was just being himself. He just took the friendship, and I don't think he ever planned to do what he planned to do. He's just gone down that route, and she's just gone with him because of where she was pushed at the time. I mean... Yeah, he didn't. He just. The friendship at the beginning was genuine, and I believe that. Like, he had no plans to fuck her up or do anything.
I watched an interview with Michael Shannon. He's a fucking intense guy, but he actually talks like very in a very relaxed way about this. But he said that he would say to freaking what's Peter, when Peter says this line, like, what's he really thinking? And freaking would be like, "Oh, he's lying. He's lying. It's not true. He knows it's not true." But Shannon decided not to play it that way. So he
quite gladly did.
Shannon played it, "I believe everything I'm saying," and freaking directed it as he knows what he's saying is bullshit. And that's what makes this interesting, because then it conflicts in the final performance.
Yeah.
It never feels like Shannon's trying to pull the wool over her eyes. It feels like he's fully immersed in it.
Yeah. He's fully immersed, yeah.
The thing is, he is a fucking victim because, like, it was his time in war that fucked him, man. Like, I don't know how I would come
PTSD.
Back if I was... Yeah, fuck that, man. Going to fight some other guy's war? No. You want to fuck with my mind? Expose me to all that shit? Send me back to reality and then prescribe me pills and tell me I can't do this and I can't do that because of the psychosis that you fucking put in my brain? No thanks, man.
Mm.
Well, hopefully none of us are ever in that situation. But... Bringing it back to the fucking conspiracy thing, Timothy McVeigh, as Michael Shannon's character says in the film, is this guy. That's this guy. He's a guy who went to war, came back from war, and then committed this atrocious act of domestic terrorism. But was he a victim or was he a villain? He's the Michael Shannon character from this.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, you can only base it on the evidence you've been given as well, so...
Well, the evidence is he went to war, he came back from war mentally scarred, really totally entirely mentally scarred, and he decided to fucking blow up Oklahoma City.
Mm.
Yeah.
They also do all those. Well, I've heard somewhere that they do all the LSD tests on the Vietnam soldiers as well.
Yeah.
During that time period.
You sign your body over, don't you? That's what you know. There's a thing in it. That's what they say. Could you sign your body and say you're property of the US government, isn't it?
Fucking bullshit.
Fuck war, man. And all its iterations.
Let me bring this back to something that I took away from the film that is a positive for Michael Shannon. I think he's very, very good and in every shot at, like, he could be in full view, fully naked, but he always hides his willy somehow.
there was a jerry can at the end, wasn't there?
He
was moving around so much, and he was always able to hide it.
He's obviously just tucked it up.
They use tape. They got to use tape, haven't they?
I was speaking to a guy who does acting. He says, "Do you put a little bag over it in some ways, and then they hair clip it to your pubes?"
Yeah, they put a sock over it. I've seen it in some stuff. I can't remember what it is. They put a little sock over the willy.
Yeah. What do you think of the sex scene in this, Ben? It was down the Velocipasta route again.
So much saliva.
It was a montage.
The sex scene was fine in as much as it needed to play out for you to then, like, metaphorically see how the poison had been passed.
That string of spit as they kissed.
Yeah, that was quite a long string of spit for sure. Someone asked him what was the hardest thing to do in this film, hardest scene to do, and he said getting naked in front of people.
Oh, he looked relaxed.
He's a good actor, eh?
Yeah.
One of the best.
Very good.
I would love to have seen him play this on stage, because seeing him do it on stage would be far more intense when there's no cuts.
Oh, God, he's basically doing it at you as well.
Yeah, he would be. Can you imagine him screaming a shit? Fuck, that would be great.
You might believe him after a while.
He played that Matthew McConaughey role in Killer Joe as well. Can you? I think he would have done better than McConaughey.
Wow.
Yeah. He would have been scarier than McConaughey.
Mm, I need to watch it again.
Yeah, so do I.
Sucking that drumstick. That's what I remember.
Sucking that drumstick. Yeah. Filth. All right, well, I think that's it. And we'll come back to some topics in our Patreon bit afterwards. But what did some of the people say, some of the listeners?
Discussion.
Go on, Adam. This is your mate, Francis Ciborini. Do you want to tell him what he said?
Yeah, I actually watched the film with him. So obviously we lived together because of COVID and everything. But yeah, he said both Ashley Judd and Michael Shannon gave great performances. But I have to say Michael Shannon is incredible at executing that menacing intensity towards the end. It's hard to watch him, but you can't look away. And I agree with that. It's hard to watch this, but you can't stop watching it. That is probably the reason why I don't think you could watch this film again. Personally, for me,
it's an unpleasant watch.
You wouldn't go through your list, like, if you had your collection and go, "Oh, I need to watch that again." Would you? Maybe, maybe after a couple of years, but
yeah. I feel like I would never watch it again now. Not because I didn't enjoy it, but because I've taken all I can from it.
He loves an intense role, doesn't he? Shannon.
Who's Shannon? Yeah.
Yeah, he does. But equally, he'll fucking rock up in something like The Night Before.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, man. Adam, have you seen The Night Before?
No, I haven't.
Adam, you're like The Night Before.
The comedy
wait a minute.
One.
It's The Night Before the with
the Christmas Joseph one.
Cornel. Yeah, I have seen it, but I can't remember in it.
Michael Shannon is like the angel, the drug dealer angel that keeps appearing throughout.
I don't remember this film.
Oh, it's such a good film, considering I don't like Seth Rogen, or didn't.
But anyway, he's in Groundhog Day, but I don't remember him being in Groundhog Day.
Very, very briefly. Very briefly in Groundhog Day. And he's very fresh-faced. It's almost like not even Shannon. He's been in some other... he's been in, like, Man of Steel and stuff, so he doesn't always have to do intense things.
He's very intense in Man of Steel.
I always remember it from Midnight Special and how terrible that film was as well.
Oh, fuck off, mate. You lost me there. The other review that we've got is from Om2Cool, who says, "Interesting and a bit yucky, somewhere down the middle in the Friedkin ranking, in my opinion." How would you rank this film against some of the other Friedkins, like Sorcerer and Exorcist?
I think this is the only third film I've seen of his, and I'd personally maybe put this up there with my favourite of his. What's the other film I've seen? One second.
You've seen Exorcist. Haven't you seen Killer Joe?
I've seen French Connection, Exorcist and Sorcerer.
Haven't seen Killer Joe?
No.
This is my least favourite out of the bunch.
Really?
I've seen Sorcerer. And what were the other ones? Sorcerer, Killer Joe.
Exorcist,
yeah.
French Connection.
I haven't seen French Connection.
Mate, you need to watch Jade. Fucking appalling film. I watched it recently. Oh, God.
I've had Cruising on my list for ages. I was actually going to buy it earlier, but it was like £12 to buy on DVD, so I didn't buy it. You can rent it on them. Rent it on YouTube, but yeah, it's expensive to buy.
Yeah, well.
Did he do a remake of 12 Angry Men as well?
Yeah, he did.
Fuck that shit.
That's dangerous territory, that is.
Yeah, good cast, though.
Was it TV special?
Yeah, it was. It was a TV movie, but it got, like, sort of... it's quite well-respected because of all the actors he's got in it. My man, George C. Scott from Exorcist 3 is in it as well.
Yeah.
Connections... Anyway, shall we place this thing?
This place this thing.
All right, we took a little break there to place Bug. It got an average of 7.7. We have four other films that were a 7.7. From top to bottom, they are Birds of Prey, Toy Story 4, Mission Impossible Fallout, and the other William Friedkin film, Sorcerer, which shouldn't be bottom of that pack, but it is. Myself and Adam agreed that Bug was better than all of those, and Paul didn't think it was better than any of those, but
we
outvoted him. So it's top. So above Bug is Beautiful Thing with 7.8, and below it is Birds of Prey at 7.7. I think that's fair.
There we go. Yeah. That's fine.
It was so close to toppling Infinity War and Endgame, which were just above Beautiful Thing. Alas. Alas.
That's always a personal challenge for you, isn't it, Ben?
It is.
Yeah.
That's a benchmark.
I don't fiddle the scores to try and get it over it, though. But I'm happy if they do. Anyway, that was Bug. Shall we go and pay a visit to Patreon's Corner and find out what our patrons have been watching over the last week?
You're stuttering like a motherfucker on this
episode.
What can I say?
Suffering succotash, man. I'm doing
He's got a bug around him that he needs to hit.
Right, yes, our first patron is Julio, and he has watched the following, and he said the following. I want to mention WandaVision just to get Ben to grind his teeth. Ha ha.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about that?
Because I feel like we could even spend ages on this, and I don't want to give it too much airtime, but my understanding, people are saying that WandaVision is really groundbreaking and whatnot because it's, I don't give a fuck, got her trapped in some sort of sitcom scenario at the moment, and all this weird dreamy stuff is happening. Like, you're a Disney product, I'm sorry. Like, nothing wrong with that, but don't pretend you're anything other than what you are. You're a Disney product. And because you show that you can do something a little bit inventive, so can Adam. Adam could create something a little bit inventive.
That's saying bad on Adam,
we're not
surely.
Giving him a TV show to do it.
And £250 million, whatever they spent on it.
I don't think it's groundbreaking. I think at the moment I'm just interested, and that's about it. I'm not saying it's fantastic.
It's really quite bizarre at the moment, and I don't know how I feel about it. I'm only watching it because my housemates want to watch it, but I don't think I'd give it much time of day.
You need to get some new housemates, mate.
Next thing Julio said, he says, but more importantly, I watched Boys State, and it was one of 2020's best, in my opinion. It's an Apple TV exclusive over here. Is that the same overseas? Great documentary. I don't even know what it is.
I don't know what that is, no.
I think it is on Apple TV as well. I remember seeing it when I logged into Apple TV.
Do you subscribe to Apple TV?
I got it free for a year when I got my new phone, so...
I only got a free month. I am going to sign up to it, actually, because
there is some good stuff on it. I haven't watched a lot on it. What have I watched? I watched the Beastie Boys documentary, which was good. And I watched... On the Rocks is an Apple TV thing.
Oh yeah,
I think a couple of them popped up in my end of year from the last year, but I've also watched Ted Lasso, which is actually a great watch. It's a very feel-good film.
Oh yeah,
they filmed that in Crystal Palace Football Stadium.
Yes, they did. It's just very feel-good and football. Yeah, it's a bit silly in places. And I started watching Rob McElhenney's new thing, but I've only watched one episode of that.
We're not interested in what you've been watching. We're interested in what the patrons have been watching.
I'm just talking about Apple TV.
Just so everyone knows, it is on Apple TV in Great Britain. Do you want to know the synopsis of this documentary?
Yeah.
It says, in an unusual experiment, 1,017-year-old boys from Texas joined together to build a representative government from the ground up.
Okay. Interesting.
Interesting.
Is Julio in it?
Well.
Or did it say teenage boys?
It says 17-year-old boys.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah. So, the next patron is Jamie Russell, and he's got a recommendation here close to my heart. He says, I watched Lucky, Harry Dean Stanton's final film, and it was an absolute gem. Some may view it as slow-moving and lacking in event, but I was captivated by it. It has great soul, and that's a quality that I actively try to seek out in films to watch. It also has some fantastic writing and a standout exchange of dialogue between Stanton and Skerritt in an emotional alien reunion nearly 40 years later. Highly recommend. I have seen Lucky, and it is fucking brilliant. I agree.
I've been on my list for a while.
It's a good film. It's just a nice story, really, isn't it?
Now, you've seen Adam.
Yeah, you kind of watch this man just pot around a bit and just do some stuff.
It's very lovely. It is exactly that. And what Jamie said is right. Seeking out movies that have got soul, that's it. Mm. It could be seen as very slow-moving, but it's soul. And David Lynch, I know that he mentioned the Stanton and Skerritt exchange, but the David Lynch story when he comes into the bar and talks about his turtle is incredible.
Oh yeah, I completely forgot about that bit.
The David Lynch story. What, in the film?
Yeah, David Lynch is in the film.
Oh, okay.
As a character.
And he has such a bizarre character, David Lynch character, basically.
Mm.
But it's so, but it's such a pure, the whole film is really pure and optimistic and feel good. Nice. And would you, and he's, Harry Dean Stanton sings a song at one point and it's beautiful.
Is it in Lucky when he goes to see the man about the ostriches? Am I thinking of that right?
No, that is My Son, My Son.
Yes, that's My Son.
Oh, why did I think of that bit there? But yeah, Yeah, it's
anyway,
good,
yeah, good recommendation, Jamie.
It's been on my list for a while, so I haven't got around to it.
Our next one up is from Nerdrovert. Have I got that right to start off with?
You have.
Good, yeah. I watched Ocean's 8 for the first time, and it was better than the reception it received. It lacked character depth, but even the other... I fucked it up. Depth. I didn't make it to the end. Unlucky Paul.
Character depth.
It lacked character...
It lacked character depth, but...
No, it doesn't say depth!
Development, that's why I'm fucking it up.
It's probably true. It probably does lack character depth.
It lacked character development, but other than that, it was fun way to spend the 90-ish minutes. Hashtag give us more female driven ensemble movies.
Say that hashtag again.
Yeah, I fucked that up as well, because I read the word.
It's because it goes on to a second line as well.
Yes. Hashtag give us more female driven ensemble vehicles.
Ensemble, but yeah. Ensemble.
Yeah, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Anyway.
Anyway, I do agree with his review of that.
I don't. Me and Nerdvot has had a nice conversation about this film, and I think it's a terrible film, and it's just putting a female into a male vehicle and not creating anything original, and then at the same time putting in songs like, these boots are made for walking, and it's like, can you do better than that, please?
Yeah, but the film itself isn't terrible, though, Paul. That's the thing. It's not bad acting.
It's not good.
It's not like... There is a good film in that. It's just like, I mean, the personal, you've kind of gone in with a judgment from the beginning of the film.
No, it's not even a good film.
I'm not saying this is amazing. I think it gave it like a 6 out of 10, but it's better than Ocean's 12 and 13.
I don't think that can be true. 12 and 13 are okay.
It's not as good as 11, but I put it better above them two.
Vincent Cassell dances over lasers in one of them. How can it be better than that?
But yeah.
Anyway, James Corden is in it, right? That's enough for it.
Yes, yeah, and that is another thing.
Not
yes.
in it for a lot.
Burn it. Burn him. America, you can keep him.
I probably would have actually given the film a 7 if he wasn't in it, but yeah.
America will probably elect James Corden to president in about 12 years' time.
Not surprising.
Do you reckon he'd be dangerous, or do you reckon he'd just be an idiot?
Oh, he is a dangerous idiot.
I saw someone tweet the other day, and it always made me laugh. It goes, Ruth Jones deserves the career that James Corden had.
That's true. Yeah. She's the fucking talent.
Yeah.
He's just a fat slob who managed to make his whole shtick, I'm fat and a bit of an idiot. So send me to Hollywood, please.
Yeah, that's it.
And let me sing in a car with musicians all the time, and everyone will love it and tweet about it and share it on Facebook
fucking
all the time like it's original. Like,
fucking hate it.
I can sing in a fucking car.
That's fucking dangerous right there, straight away. You should be paying attention to the road rather than singing, and your fucking massive ego, just because he likes to sing himself, he likes to insert himself with all these amazing musicians who are really good singers. He likes to put himself there and think, I'm deserving of being next to these really good singers.
I thought that car is on the back of a truck and it's getting towed along.
I don't give a fuck.
It's all shit, and let's not even talk about Corden anymore.
Stop it.
Paul, do you want to do the last one?
I'm going to pick Lesbian Vampire Killers as my next film.
Fuck that.
You better not, mate. You really... That one I will judge the book by the cover, and I know that the film will not be good. Do not suggest that.
Please don't. Our last one is from Katie and Oti from the For Your Reference podcast. They have said, we just finished the 2-part Tiger documentary. We love to make people our hero, but look forward to ridicule and discard the same. We need to stop worshipping people so they can make their own mistakes instead of being our beacon of hope.
So I would like to know genuinely who... I take her point totally, but I don't know, maybe it's because we're not Americans, but I would never think Tiger Woods is a hero. I can imagine him being a role model for people and an icon,
I feel like
sporting
he's
icon.
Very unfairly judged.
I mean, I don't think I've got anyone who's a hero in my eyes. like, apart from Batman, but he's not going to disappoint me.
Aww. But Tiger Woods, is, I feel like he's been a very victim of his, well, of those downfall that he had.
Like, he cheated on his wife, and that's that. The reality, what KE is saying there is the legit thing, right? People make mistakes and do bad shit. We shouldn't be surprised by that. Yeah. And the only reason that it becomes a big deal, cheating on your spouse is not a big deal in the grand scheme of things because it happens all the time. We wouldn't do it, but when you're famous, suddenly it's like, oh, well, they can't have a career.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He's been harshly judged from that. He's still one of the greatest athletes ever. That's what he's achieved within a sport.
I mean, let's steady on. Golf's one of the dullest sports in the entire fucking world, mate.
Yeah, but to do what you got to appreciate what people do within their respective sport.
I prefer to play golf over cricket.
They're both dull.
They're both dull, but I'd rather play golf.
So in terms of a hero, I know what you mean. I don't have a hero, but there are people, rightly or wrongly, that if I hear that they've done something negative, like cheat on their wife, I'd go like, oh, what? That's really disappointing. Like, for me, Tom York. If I found out Tom York was carrying on an affair, I'd be like, oh, man, you let me down because I listen to your lyrics and I connect with what you're saying.
It's more of like a respect for these people.
It's a respect, yeah. Mm. You don't have a real hero, or it's not even a hero. Hero is a strong word, but like someone that is like a role model. That's what I would love to be. I would love to be that person.
I don't think so.
Not even that, but put a poster of your, like, on your room or, like, not even, but obviously put a poster up, but if you had a poster, you put it up, kind of thing.
No. I don't.
Paul don't believe in anyone.
You must do, Paul.
I don't. I can't think of one person I'm like, wow, he's, like, a great person.
Tom Hanks?
No. He's a good actor, that's it.
Tom Hanks.
Obviously, I respect him to a point, but not, like, oh my god, I love this guy so much.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Okay, so here's what is interesting.
What about if they died then, Paul? If someone died and you'd actually generally be upset by their death, like, I'm not talking going, oh, that's a shame that person died, but affect you on an emotional level afterwards.
No one.
And you still think about it as well.
Literally no one.
See, this reminds me of the fact that, you know, when Paul went to Comic-Con last year or whenever it was, he said to us, well, whatever circumstances, he was like, no, I won't get any pictures with anyone. I'm not interested in that. That's the difference.
Yeah. I don't care for that.
Yeah. If I can get a picture with fucking Tom York, I will wait and get that picture because that's like, oh, man, that's so cool. It's so exciting. I love that. Mm. But you don't dig it.
No. Don't bother me. They're all people. I respect them for their talent, but I don't respect them.
Old fogey. Fucking hell. That's something my dad would say. They're just people.
They are just people. I think it might be my oversaturation with working with these people for like fucking over 10 years now in the BBC. I just see these people all the time. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, but I know, but let's not compare the people at the BBC with the real talent.
I know, but let me say, when I used to work at TVC, I saw Steven Spielberg.
But you're working professionally with them. Like, if you went to a gig, so you don't go to a gig, but if you went to a movie premiere, right? Jeff Goldblum movie premiere, and then Jeff Goldblum is like, oh, if you go and wait for 15 minutes, you'll be able to get a picture with Jeff. You wouldn't do that?
I don't think so.
That's weird. I can't relate to that, mate.
I don't get the part where you said you wouldn't be upset if they died.
Obviously, I'll be like, oh, that's a shame.
But then you move. I mean, like, deaths that you've never met this person, but they have come into your life and they've been such a beacon in your life that you'd actually be upset if they died. Like, you've never met this person.
This is the thing, right? I have had a lot of tragedy in my life. A lot of people die, like, young in my family. That death doesn't bother me. If people die, I know people die in the world.
Yeah, but you still can be upset about them dying just because you
know
them. Yeah,
but no, but it's, I've had these close people. I feel sad for the people that are close to me. But when it comes to people in the world that I don't really know, I respect them for what they do, but I don't know them. It's like, yeah, people die.
Yes, they do, but you can still view somebody in that light just because you don't know them, I think. They're still.
But what do you want me to do? Cry?
They offer you still. No, I'm not saying cry, but you have to cry, but the emotion
affects
you.
Obviously, I feel like, oh, that's a shame. But I don't know what else you want me to do, Adam. What do you want me
I'm
to do?
I'm just asking.
For them?
I'm just generally asking. I'm not asking. What would you I don't do? Want you to break down and cry and tell me. I'm just generally asking. If there is anybody like that.
What would you do differently to that I would do?
There's people that have died before and you generally, you don't, without crying, but you can mourn.
Are you going to go to their funeral?
I wouldn't go to the funeral because they wouldn't. That's just different. But you mourn them in a different way. But you actually have a death.
You're the one telling me like that. I you can't understand how I react when someone dies. What do you do differently that I don't do?
I'm not saying I can't understand how you react. That's the difference.
Wait. Here's the test.
I'm just saying, isn't there anybody like that? That's what I'm saying. I'm not getting how you react to it. That's not the point I'm trying to get at here.
All right. Here's the test on your point then, Adam. How did you react, Paul, when Robin Williams died?
I was like, that's incredible. Like, it's incredibly sad that because he's killed himself. He was obviously a very depressed person. But that it's like that's sad. That's it.
Mm.
Well, I don't know what you want me to do.
No, I'm not saying you should do anything.
I'm not saying you should. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying there's nobody.
I'm not saying it doesn't make me. It doesn't, like, I don't feel upset for them and their families. It's like that's a sad thing.
Okay, Paul. If you could play that game, you can invite three people around your dinner table.
Okay.
Who would they be? In fact,
they're dead.
I think this is a good point on which to pretty much end the episode. We're going to continue that on our Patreon discussion, along with our main topic, which is films where things that seem to be going on the surface, but something else is going on underneath the surface. And we're going to continue this discussion there. So if you want to carry on this, because otherwise this episode will go forever, you can join us there. But until then, Paul, do you want to say what's happening in the next episode?
Yes, in the next episode, we have the very wonderful Patreon. You've got me saying Patreon now. I say patron. I say patron, right? Either or. We got the wonderful patron, Jamie Russell, coming on to talk about one of my favourite films, Burn After Reading.
Okay.
His choice.
I'm very neutral towards this film, so I don't know.
Well, Adam, where you're going to have to pick a fucking side, my friend.
I don't know if I want to.
You're going to have to. If you come neutral on that conversation, I'll beat you down.
Very middle ground, so it's like...
I feel like you'll probably push me into towards Ben's corner with your angerness towards it, Paul.
We're going to see how it plays out. I just find the film very average and very dull and very forgettable. It's only because I know Paul loves it so much that I'm going to fight him on it. And it's all with love, not because I want to destroy what he loves. He's going to love it regardless of what I say, so I may as well be a bit horrible about it.
Go for it.
Yes. So you can join us on the next episode for that business.
Until then, we'll see you later or see you on the Patreon service.
Yes.
Bye-bye. It must